In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And, ooh, boy, this is a big week for comics.
Summer is kicking off, baby. And, you know, we say big week, but this time, and only this time,
no,
we mean
that's
it.
Not true. Not
yeah. That's this
there's,
time.
There's one other time. See if you can determine the other time that we meet it, because this is the first time, and there's going to be one more time in the future, and I don't want to...
Yeah. We need some sort of interesting lie detector test, if only there was one in one of the comics we're going to talk about.
Ooh, Imperial number one from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Federico Vincentini and Ivan Coelho. This is the first of a four-part event series where Hickman and company are remaking the cosmic Marvel universe. This is very similar to the kickoff that he did for the Ultimate Universe, where the idea is they sort of set the tone for the thing with a short series, and then they're going to spin off, presumably, into multiple other series that we don't quite know about yet. But this kicks off with a big, and I should mention spoilers for all of these books that are coming out this week right up front, but this kicks off with a big death of the Hulk's son. No, not that one, the other one.
Yeah, the other one.
Yeah, Hulk even says, he's like, you know, I didn't really know him super well.
It was just crazy when he was like, they killed my son. And I was like, oh no, Scar's dead. And then they got to the next page. I was like, what are you talking about?
That's well, I feel like we have this thing where the Hulk fucks. Like, there's, like, old man Logan, he's got, like, hundreds of kids, and it's like, oh, okay. I guess when he's just out of his main element, he's just making babies.
100%. Anyway, that is the kickoff for the book, but it turns out that the Hulk is only one of many leaders who are losing their loved ones to a mysterious villain. Seemingly, the villain is revealed by the end of the issue, kicking off a big cosmic war, as space is wont to do. What do you guys think about this kickoff? How are you feeling? You excited to go to space?
I've been wanting to go. I love the space Marvel characters, and some of them, I feel like we get a lot of Guardians, we get a lot of Peter Quill, and we get some of him here. Great. It was great to see the Planet Hulk stuff, and I believe it's been announced we're going to get a Planet She-Hulk, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, there's two one-shots that are coming up, Planet She-Hulk and one focusing on Black Panther.
That's very fun.
It's just a planet of lawyers, and it is cutthroat. Oh, man. Wait till you see it.
I feel like that's set up really well in this book. But the character that I feel like has just been underserved for a long time is the characters whose helmet is on the cover right here, Nova. Love some Nova. Love, we get a Peter Quill and Nova hang sesh. Those two doing some stuff is going to be very fun. The thing I was surprised about most after the Manhunt from the X universe, it was like, follow up on this, Professor X going to his daughter, his precious daughter, in space. And they're like, not this issue. Nope. I was like, that was your big tease, gang.
Do you know what surprised me? And this isn't anything new, so I shouldn't have been surprised about this, but the amount of Earthlings that are in this, like just human beings from Earth specifically, to the point that I was like, let somebody else speak. Like, the only main character in this entire issue, I think, who is not specifically a character from Earth who happens to be in space, is Peter Quill's father and
Jason.
And most specifically, like, he is best known for coming to Earth and having Peter Quill. So, like, I understand we live on Earth, and that's part of the reason that that's central here. But, I think it was the point when Peter Quill went to the bar and was like, Richard Rider, what are you doing here? And I was like, you're both from Earth. Just go do this on Earth. Why is this a cosmic event? I want to see a couple more aliens.
Alex, you ever bump into people?
Gladiator get involved, some Skrulls, something like that. They come to the Skrulls and they're like, we got to talk about the Skrulls from the Kree. Very specifically,
Hulkling and Wicked. You want to see Guardian? He sucks.
Deathbird.
Guardian sucks.
I thought this was Supreme Intelligence. Come on.
I thought this was epic.
Sorry, Pete, but Alex, when you bump into someone from Long Island when you're somewhere else, you're like, hey, look at us.
Yeah, I know, but we're
Pete Rochester, don't tell me, Pete, you're going to bump into someone from Rochester. You're not going to be like, look at us out here.
Here's the thing, though. If it's like I'm bumping into somebody in Long Island, like on Long Island, fine. But if I'm in Italy and I see somebody from Long Island, we are not the most interesting people there. Like I don't think I'd be like, let me show you some photos from my vacation in Italy, and it's all my friend from Long Island.
I thought this was epic. I really loved it when Hulk had that moment where he was like, the guy asked for mercy, and Hulk's like, wrong planet. I was like, this is badass.
What do you think about the fact that and Hulk I also both liked, fucks and kills?
I also just thought the start was slow, which I appreciated, but then there was just a lot of talking about strategy, which I was like, I don't know how much of this conversation we really need. You know what I mean? But I also really love the art.
First time reading a Jonathan Hickman book.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. It's all strategy, my guy. You got tricked into the Planet Hulk focus at the top, and you were like, yes,
yeah.
Hulk fucks and kills. Well, Alex, I think the Hulk, when he's off planet, it's like when you go to Italy, you fucking kill. And so the Hulk is sort of doing that same thing.
Yeah, there's no... I think Sakaar
is sort of the Italy of space, I think.
Yeah, just to check, and I know this isn't being recorded, you can't be arrested for murders internationally, right?
There's a lot of spy culture built around that idea, yes.
Right, international waters, I know.
So diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, exactly.
That's something I think you can say. I think you can just say that, I believe. Yeah.
Right as you're done stabbing the guy. Diplomatic immunity, baby.
Yeah, that's what you whisper in the victim's ear.
I like the setup, other than my stupid little quibbles that I mentioned above. Great art from Federico Vigentini and Ivan Coelho throughout.
Art's unbelievable.
Let's talk about some theories here, because we get two dudes playing a game. I'm going to take a wild stab and say one of them is Games Master.
What?
I know. That would be crazy. No. I feel like the other one is probably Loki, based on the cut of his chin and his hair.
Ooh.
Wow. Look at you. Chip? See, I agree with you. They make the most sense. They're the least... I don't need them right now. We've seen... Mm-hmm. I feel like we've been a little over-leveraged on both Loki and Games Master lately.
Buckle up, take a sip.
I don't mind all these Earth folks in space if we could take a break from Games Master. And,
let me throw another theory out at you. So... this is getting into the end of the issue, but we get set up with these four murders of loved ones that are happening by this poison. Jason is leading the charge to find out who did it. At first, they're like, oh, it's a Kree Skrull thing. So they accuse the Krees and the Skrulls. But the Krees and the Skrulls are like, yes, we did make it, but we didn't use it. Yeah. Instead, it was stolen from us. And it certainly seems like it was stolen by the Wakandans. They chase a Wakandan out who kills a bunch of people in the meeting.
Problem. It's like anytime there's a big meeting, there's going to be a Wakandan spy somewhere watching. So being like, oh, Wakandan spy doesn't mean like, you know, it was them.
Yeah, here's my theory is, even though we're told he's dead at the end, I think it was Jason. Like, I think we're setting him up, Jason of Spartax, as the big bad of the cosmic universe, because that's kind of the place he was in for a really long time. Mm-hmm. I think he set up all of this. That is not a Wakandan. He stole all the stuff, and he's doing it so that, I don't know how he can come back from death necessarily, but, like, he can take power or control from behind the scenes.
I mean, I like that theory. I mean, I definitely know that wasn't a Wakandan. Yeah, Games Master's just placing bets on who it is as well. I agree. The Jason being, like, chill, I was like, this is fake. I just thought, though, he was dying anyway. So I don't know exactly if your theory will be correct. Because, I mean, there are a lot of other villains in space. What about Annihilus?
Annihilus? Does Linus make plans, or does he just scream at the Fantastic Four and have his little little glowy pillbox on his neck?
I hope he shows up. I feel like he was such a big part of the previous multiple iterations of space. So
we'll see what happens. We'll be there for every single.
It's an interesting start, though. I'm excited.
Yeah. I think it's fun. We will see what happens. Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2, number one from DC Comics, written by Brian Buccellato, art by Christian Duce. This is the sequel to the hit series of last year or 2 years ago. Whatever it is this time, Task Force X is coming straight for the MonsterVerse, and we're not quite there yet, but we are headed mostly to the MonsterVerse, where the previous one was mostly in the DC Universe. But we got some big monster fights. We got the Justice League. We got Godzilla. We got Kong. We even got, though this was spoiled in advance, Wyatt Russell's character from Monarch Legacy of Monsters shows up here as well. So that's a big deal if you're a fan of Mark. Pete, you seem pretty psyched, so take it away.
Yeah, I thought this was a blast seeing, you know, spoilers, but the King Shark getting kind of like blown up to be able to fight Godzilla. That was just awesome. That was fun. I thought that was a cool idea and well executed. So I was having a blast with this.
You know, I had to halfway through this issue, also, I had to go back and be like, what was this cover? Oh, right. Because there's no. Half the issue is just like, look, Barry Allen got married. You know, what is he going to do about his personal issues? I feel like the first series had a similar, like, and I set credit as being great, a nice part. And I feel like they're doing the same thing by maybe running this secret identity thing throughout. And this issue felt a little more discordant, where it's like, Barry Allen's getting married. And it's like, and King Kong's pissed. Watch out. So I don't know.
Yeah, King Kong, he usually stresses about gifts, you know, for big events.
Well, he loves little blonde girls, so he was probably pissed at Barry getting married.
Plus, he can't fit into his monkey suit, as they say. Oh, my God.
I think this is a fun kickoff. I don't know if Barry marrying Iris works as well as the tension between Superman and Lois did in the first series. So to your point, Justin, it felt maybe a little repetitive, but the Task Force-esque stuff is very fun and gives this a needed bit of levity because the way the Justice League is in this universe is they're very serious pretty much all the time. So fun seeing them, fun seeing some Legion of Doom characters as well. I wish that reveal at the end hadn't been spoiled, because when they got there, it was like, and I'm Lee Shaw. I was like, all right.
Sounds yeah.
Good. Well, also, it was kind of crazy, the oh shit moment when Waller got shot. I was like,
You must have loved that, Pete.
It was fun.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, this is a separate continuity. They already horribly killed Guy Gardner in the first series, so anything could happen here. Maybe Amanda Waller is dead. I guess we'll see what happens.
But let me ask you, where are we going with the Godzilla Kong of all this? Like, it feels they were barely in this book. Yeah. I don't know what the idea is.
That's kind of always what it is. They're always barely in it, and then they come in at just the right moment to save the day. First, Godzilla attacks, and then they team up with Godzilla. That's how this stuff works. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Wow, I wish I had your middling enthusiasm,
Alex. Here's the thing I'm very enthusiastic about. Star Trek number 32 from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by David Tinto. This is part 5 of 5 of Lore War, where lore has Age of Apocalypse, the Star Trek universe. It all comes down to this as our heroes fight back to get 4 characters who are seen on the cover who had their brains removed so they could power Lore and Data's takeover and remaking of the universe. Pretty gross. I love this crossover. I think it tied up in really fun, really very Star Trek-y fashion. The only thing is, I guess a good thing, I wish there was more of it, because there's like one page where they free everybody from the brain machines, and I was like, no, this is 4 one-shots. I want to see each of these things happen, because they're so insane.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. They did the Geordi LaForge Borg. I was like, yo, let me swim in that, guys. I love that idea because he already has a computer on his face. Seems like a natural mix. Yeah. But there, I mean, this issue is jam packed with ideas. Yeah. I like a lot of the, to steal a phrase from, a speaker I admire, twists and turns in this book. There's some good stuff. There's a to be concluded at the end of this. So we do not really know where the Star Trek universe is going to land, but certainly literally anything can happen right now. And that's surprising in a good way. Yeah.
The Lore War was a blast. It really lived up to the hype. A lot went down in these five issues. I think, you know, a sign of a good event is, you know, you want more afterwards. But I do agree they could have at least enjoyed some of this a little bit more. But a lot of heads, a lot of brains in this. But, you know, if that's your bag, then you're going to have a blast in the Lore War.
Oh, I love brains out of skulls.
Oh, man.
I'm like, let me see.
You do see have a good like, head house, you know what I mean? Where it's just somebody's head and you walk in the mouth type of thing. You know what I mean? There's plenty of that.
A head house?
Yeah,
that's what. Sorry, Pete, you've never invited us to your home, even though we've invited you so often to our home. You stayed with Alex recently. But do you have a head house?
No, I don't.
But do you have a wall of mirrors in your house?
I do not live far from the shoe house. So
all right, you're fun... I don't know
what wow, that's the most country shit. You know, we make fun of you for living in the country, and you're like, I live by the shoe house. The house is a shoe.
Yeah,
you live in a fairy tale. So you live in a candy house with a witch.
No.
Because I'll tell you what, if there's one guy who I would get suckered in by a candy house with a witch, it's you. But yeah. I also think you could sweet talk that witch into letting you be her roommate.
Here's the thing. I think the witch would be like, please stop eating my house. I don't know how you worked away at the foundation so quickly. My God, Pete LePage.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and then that's how you get a wife, Pete. All right.
Fall Ultimate in love with a candy witch.
Come back to my shoe house, you candy witch.
That's the clip we need from this episode to really bring in the new listeners.
Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion number one from Marvel, written by Dennis Capp and Cody Ziegler, art by Jonas Scharf. Finally, the Ultimate Universe of the Marvel 616 are getting together, and specifically this picking up on a cliffhanger, not a cliffhanger, but a dangling plot line where the Maker left Miles Morales a mysterious blank card before he left to remake the Ultimate Universe or remake a new universe in his image. And now Miles's baby sister has disappeared into the Ultimate Universe and he's gone after it. So he's going to take a little tour here as he tries to find her. And this one, of course, it kicks off with him hanging out with Spider-Man and Spider-Man's son, who is also a Spider-Man. What'd you guys think about this mashup?
Hey, Justin, you got your pup den? Are you still in the Dennis camp or what's up, bro?
I'm actually organizing a tetherball tournament in Dennis Camp if you guys want to register. It's really fun. It's good. I'm a counselor in Dennis Camp, and I have very short shorts. You guys should come by. It's the water is fine. I was surprised by this issue. It felt like, you know, incursion is a big word to throw around, right, in the Marvel Universe.
Sure is.
And this felt like the start of something much bigger or a standalone thing. But it's sort of in the middle. This book oddly touches on sort of all of the big players that Dennis Camp has set up in his Ultimates book as they go around the horn. But it also has sort of the containment of a classic just Spider-Men crossover story. So I don't actually know where we're going to land with it. I also feel like the Maker, what is Miles' importance to this story that the Maker would go out of his way to give him a little business card that takes him? Yeah. I don't know. This posed a lot of questions that I'm curious to get into the answers.
Well, the good news is it's just the first issue. We'll get more answers. But I do agree that this is fun. It's got great art. And, you know, it's a little bit of that Spider-Man meme where they're all just kind of three of them pointing at each other, kind of brought to life a little bit here in a fun way. So, yeah, I'm having a good time with this. So, yeah, more of this, please.
This made me feel weird, this comic book, reading it, and for a number of reasons. One reason is I would love for these universes to stay separate. I'm really enjoying the Ultimate Universe, and I know that's tilting at windmills, but, like, having Miles come in and interrupt this, it made, very specifically, Ultimate Spider-Man suck more. Like, all of the things that I have been okay with, Peter Parker being backgrounded and being like, I'd rather not do this. In his main book, there's a tension there that I think is inherent through all of the issues. Here, him trying to nope his way out of the situation constantly is just like, what are we like? And I understand that's the point, is Richard, his son, looks at Miles and is like, oh, that's a cool Spider-Man. But knowing the Ultimate Spider-Man is not cool, like, we know that, but we hope that he will be cool. In this issue, he is decidedly very uncool. And that makes it, again, it just led to an uncomfortable read for some reason.
It definitely popped the balloon a little bit in a way that I was surprised. Because it's something I think I've at least talked about a lot in Ultimate Spider-Man, is there's so much tension with the contained focus and the timeline of the way the Ultimate story is being told. Like, every month is a month. We're getting ever closer to the Maker returning. And this sort of was like, actually, we can sort of screw around a little bit with that and play with the timeline, because it didn't have any of that tension and pressure. And I think it let some of the air out of the other books.
Yep.
I mean, he's still chasing his baby through time. I mean, there's that pressure.
What exactly are they doing, though? Because they're like, okay, let's look for my sister by looking in every window in New York.
That's how you look for kids, right?
I don't know.
We've got to start somewhere.
I guess. Maybe not the best way of starting, though. But
why I say chip your sister.
I would go to the M&M store and just wait for her to show up. You know what I mean?
Once again, with the candy ass, Pete.
That's where I would know to look for you, Pete.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Why don't we move on to talk about DC Pride 2025, number one from DC Comics, written by Vita Ayala, Jude Ellison, S. Doyle, Maya Houston, Sam Maggs, Tim Sheridan, Josh Trulio, and Jenny Blake. Art by Donna Guio, Vincent Cecile, Derek Charm, A.L. Kaplan, Giulio Maccione, Alex Moore, Skylar Patridge, Emilio Pilio, it was Max Sarin, Philip Seve, and Sarah Solar. Now, this is usually an anthology story, and it still kind of is anthology book, excuse me, every year. It is very lauded. It's won awards, been nominated for awards. This year, they're telling sort of one story framed around Alan Scott and his lost love, as seen in the excellent Alan Scott, the Green Lantern series, where they're going to a LGBTQ plus bar that is going to close down. Back in the day, Alan Scott and his lover had etched a heart in there, and it started a whole thing where people started drawing on the wall. They go back and visit it, and it sets off this magic spell that starts to suck all of the LGBTQ plus members of the DC universe into what they wanted their lives to be like back when they put their symbol or name or whatever on this wall, which I thought was a really neat, interesting conceit. There's also a fantastic backup story by Jenny Blake, who recently came out as trans, that is beautifully drawn and made me cry. I thought it was absolutely wonderful. But overall, wrapping up my monologue here, I thought this was another absolutely fantastic one shot.
Well, and I agree with you. This, I loved every bit of this, and the way that they keep elevating this anthology series in sort of like they, like you said, they're winning awards. They don't need to take a step and try stuff out, but they do here. And I thought it really worked. I loved the way the different art styles still worked together and kept, give them some dimensionality, but really it all had its flow. Even the sort of like, there's some disparate art here. Like the Harley story is like your classic Harley art. And it still all just really worked because it felt like everything was a reflection of the character. And I don't know. I thought it was great. And I just love the way that this is such a showpiece for all of these great creators and characters.
Yeah, I agree. This is really impressive. It also speaks to the preparation, the coordination that goes into this event, and the fact that they were so well coordinated to have this, all these stories tie into this one story. It's really impressive and well planned out, well executed, and it really reads in this comic. That's a very touching thing to see all these different kind of people and the way they're kind of touched by this place and where it brings them and all this stuff. It's very powerful and cool. And yeah, it was just such a great kind of idea for all these stories to be told in such a cool way. Impressive artwork as always, but yeah, just such a cool idea and then used it really well with these characters to kind of like bring it all home. It was impressive.
Individual shouts to the Joe Green Lantern story, the Renee Montoya story, and Alan Scott as the anchor for this has just been coming off of the series that Alex mentioned. Is just, it's really working.
Yeah. And I just want to add on, because I 100% agree with everything you guys are saying, that particularly right now when a lot of companies are minimizing their Pride presence or backing away entirely, the fact that DC just jumps in with this anthology, particularly this year, with their whole heart and a whole PR muscle behind it and everything else, is just absolutely wonderful to see. This is a lovely issue where it could have just been like, yeah, we're telling John Kent's story and a Question story, enjoy, you know? And that's not what it is. It's the exact opposite. Yeah. It's maybe the best issue that came out this week in an issue of in a week with some really fantastic issues. So shouts to DC for doing this and putting this out and really making this a wonderful special highlight of the year.
It's incredible.
Next up, The Sixth Gun, Road to the Six, number zero from Odie Press, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Brian Hurt. This is bringing back the team's lauded supernatural Western. And oh boy, there's a lot of stuff going on in this issue.
Yeah.
Sixth Gun started as like supernatural gun and got crazy complicated by the end, even as it continued to be really interesting. So it's very interesting to jump back in this world, but it, despite being a zero issue, it really does not give you a lot of room to be like, I expected it to be like previously on the Sixth Gun. And that's not what it is. It's like, you read all of Sixth Gun. Let's go.
Let's go.
But yeah. But I will say I don't have the memories of the Sixth Gun stuff that we read to be like, I understand this. But I still follow the story and I really enjoyed the progression and sort of the vast sweep that this issue encapsulates while also jumping around a fair amount.
Yeah, it definitely jumped around. But I thought, even though it was a zero issue, I was really impressed with all that went down in this issue. There was a ton of action. We got a ton of story. Yeah, I was really impressed with all the information and stuff that we got that I'm excited for what's to come. I think they did a great job of building it up. The only issue I have with it is I feel like it would be a great number one, and weird that it's a zero.
You hate
issue.
The number zero.
Yeah. A zero is just a one that's trying to hug you, Pete.
Huh.
You ever thought about that?
This is the first of many books by Cullen Bunn that we're going to have in the stack this
week.
Yeah,
we should have a bun section. You know what I mean? Just tons of buns.
We're doing a bun run.
Bun, yeah. Bun Run. Ooh, that's good. I was going to say, just to mention specifically, though, I thought Brian Hertz's art was great in this. It was really nice to see him back in this world because all of his character designs are like just on the edge of cartoony, but still so clean and intriguing. Yeah. The action is good. Great to be back in the world of the Six Gun. But what about the world to come in Marvel Knights, The World to Come, number one from Marvel, written by Christopher Priest, art by Joe Quesada, with the return of the Marvel Knights imprint with a story that kills Black Panther on page two. And that's just the very beginning of the story. It jumps all over in time, all around whatever the world to come is. We don't exactly know after the first issue, but it shows the lead up to the death of the Black Panther, the repercussions of that later on. What'd you guys think about this, about the return of Marvel Knights?
It's a big swing. You know what this reminded me of?
Baywatch like Nights, where you were like, hey, we have something that's very popular, but like, let's try to change it and see if anybody notices, but still try to keep the same thing.
I don't think they were worried about anyone noticing.
Oh, you really?
Didn't they fight vampires in Baywatch Nights?
It was all supernatural stuff.
Was it?
Can you imagine what they were thinking?
Still happening at a beach?
Can you imagine? What a time. What a time to be making television where they're like, and this is when the lifeguard fights the vampires. And then the next day he goes back to his job at Baywatch regular. this reminded me of Marvel. This is like basically Marvel Knights Ultimates, like the original Ultimates. It's very like just the titling, the type of big widescreen paneling that's happening. The art and writing feels a little bit in that world of like, keep up with us. We're moving fast. These are characters you know, but they're in a completely different way. So that's cool. I love a big swing like this. I it's hard to, because of the nature of the time dashing that's happening, there's a lot of interesting information, but I don't quite know how it connects to each other quite yet. Maybe that's will be much easier to parse like as we were going forward. But yeah, this is there's just some absolutely beautiful panels here. I'm looking at one on page 16.
Paris, page 16, bro.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, Pete.
Yeah,
Sweet 16. That's really good. The reveal at the end, I'm curious about, but
yeah,
otherwise,
so that's what I'm waiting to talk about here. Did we just kill off Black Panther so we could put a white guy in charge of Wakanda? Like, is that what's happening?
Well, I think that's what is happening, and I trust Christopher Priest to be like, hey, I'm gonna dig in on this real hard.
That feels like, dare I say, the point of this.
Yes.
Dare 100%. I say, is that fun?
I think it's fun.
I don't think it's supposed to be fun. I think it's supposed to be make you think and be provocative and push your buttons and make you upset. Like, I think you're supposed to, they spend a lot of time on Black Panther being with Storm and then with this new woman that he marries and they're having a kid. But how does he have a son who is Caucasian? We'll find out. That certainly makes things very tense and weird and interesting.
Well, they make a lot about Black Panther's making mistakes, and especially in relationships in this issue, and I think that is probably where we're going in an interesting way.
I will also give a shout-out. I thought Joe Quesada's art on this was great. Like,
so good.
Really. I was a little worried because, you know, Joe is really good, but like he hasn't done ongoing issues that I know of in a really long time. And there's always a worry with somebody who was so strong back in the day coming back and doing something like this where you're like, it's not quite the same. The art is fantastic throughout. And I think a lot of that is down to Richard Eisenhoff's inks as well.
Yeah.
He's on inks, which I just think like, I've kind of forgotten Joe Quesada, Richard Eisenhoff, I feel like, are this pair like Frank Miller and Klaus Janson, where they just work perfectly together. So awesome, awesome stuff. I really loved how this book looked.
Yeah, the art looked great.
I do think it is different in a good way. I feel like Joe Quesada is adapting to this title to make this book look the way it does. And I do think the inks and the colors have a lot to do with that. But yeah, really, I loved all of that.
Absolute Superman, number 8 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Rafa Sandoval. We are back in Smallville as Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen separately are trying to track down Superman, while also a souped-up Peacemaker is on his tail as well. Pete, I know you've really been enjoying this title, so what do you think about this issue?
Yeah, this was, first off, intense cover. This is awesome. What an ending, too. This Lois Lane is also a badass. What? But yeah, love the action, love the story. This is just kick ass, great art. I'm having a blast with this. This is fun. Enjoying the twists and turns, as Justin likes to talk about.
That's the thing Pete says. What do you guys think about the how Superman in the Absolute Universe is sort of scooped up Ra's al Ghul?
I thought that was Vandal Savage for a second.
Agree. I agree with that.
Yes, but he's very large. He's a very beefy Ra's al Ghul. And he's doing Vandal Savage stuff, talking about being alive for thousands of years and beating the shit out of people.
He's definitely, also technically.
Ra's al Ghul's whole thing, too. You know?
I know. Vandal Savage is like, he's in a suit and he's like, I'll wreck everything. And then he does. Ra's al Ghul is usually standing there being like, interesting detective. So it's definitely like Vandal Savage behavior from a Ra's al Ghul. But I don't know why they didn't just use Vandal Savage, more Superman-y choice. So interesting stream crossing.
They couldn't get him, you know.
Schedule. Yeah. What did you think about Ra's al Ghul turning a soldier into a baby and then throwing the baby off a balcony?
Oh, classic. Classic baby tossing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The old, I wish I had a son. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a mystery. There's a bit of a mystery there.
Do you think the implication is the baby got thrown down and then hit somebody in the head, right?
No.
Well, no, I think
the indication is like that the next window down, they make mattresses and they throw them out the window.
Ra's al Ghul tossed a baby into a mattress factory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sure. Oh, that's a nice way to look at it. I think the person screaming, ah, oh my God, is perhaps the person who sees a baby. I don't know if it's a catcher. It's a witness.
Now, just question. He tosses the baby into the mattress factory, right? At that point, are you like, oh, phew, the baby's safe, and then the camera zooms out and it says combination mattress anvil factory, and you're like, oh, no!
No! Why do they work together? That's opposite industries. Different materials. How does the infrastructure work, is what they would say. Yeah. But I will say, you know, it rains men in New York, and sometimes it rains babies at the same
time. Oh,
you know, it sort of starts with babies, like a little, like, drizzle, and then it progresses. It progresses into a heavier rain.
Then you see the teens, and then you're like, oh, we're in trouble.
Yeah. But then when it's raining men, that's when you say hallelujah. Yes.
And let's see if we're saying hallelujah about this next comic. The moon is following us.
Hold on. We didn't say anything. We didn't say enough about this book because I do like this book.
We talked about the mattress factory, the anvil factory.
None of that is in this title. I'm so sorry. This book has a point, and I think that's worth mentioning. Like, I feel like Jason Aaron is building toward ideas. It's set in Smallville, a town where big things seem to be happening. Let's talk about renaming this town because it's a big place. He's really differentiating.
Sorry, you wanted to talk about something substantial, right?
Yeah. You want to talk about something important.
Why are you making a pretty big point?
You brought this back up to do bits about Smallville?
I don't do bits. I don't do bits. Everything is real. I say real. I'm real.
Okay.
This Absolute Universe that Jason Aaron is plotting speaks to our universe, the reader, in a great way.
Agreed. The Moon is Following Us, number 10 from Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Daniel Warren Johnson and Riley Rosmo. This is the final issue of the tale as the parents of a small kid named Penny try to rescue her from her dream state, or does she try to rescue them? Pete, I know you love this book, so take it away before we break your heart.
No, don't break my heart. Alex, how could you? This is a story about an amazing daughter who has magical, amazing dream powers named Penny. That's just like your daughter. I just think that this is a very creative, magical book that is just artistically impressive, gets you in the feels. I've been super, super impressed with this. It got a little muddy in some issues where I wasn't sure what was happening, but by the end here, you kind of figure it out a little bit. And don't know. I eat it with a fork and knife. I love every single issue and panel, and it's just super impressive, and I love it.
You eat it with a fork and knife. I mean, that's like, I love this, like a steak.
Yep.
Or like, are you talking about like pizza?
No, I don't eat pizza with a fork and knife.
But you like pizza.
Yeah, I love pizza.
Okay. Just trying to get to the bottom of my man, Pete LePage. All right. The thing with this book is I stand by what I've said maybe the last 6 issues. Like, there are good ideas here. The art's fantastic, but it's just a little wobbly. I think reading this last issue, it feels like the idea for this book, if I could put an organizing principle around it, is we think we save our kids, but our kids actually save us.
Yeah.
In life, in our regular human life. And that is like what this fantastical story.
You're completely against that. You're completely
against that idea.
You don't think there's any validity to that.
I think that's a great idea.
You hate your children and they don't enrich your life at all.
No, I feel like when I threw my kid out the window of the skyscraper and they were able to grab onto that mattress and anvil, I knew that they were ready to be raised. Yeah. But I think that's a great idea. It's just, it got a little off course. And the way this book ended, I was like, oh, God, what an unnecessary gut punch to have happen here. And the dad storyline,
unnecessary gut punch?
The way the last, like, 5 pages, I was like, ugh, harsh. And I think
Want anybody to die? You thought it would just be...
No, I didn't need to. The message doesn't have to be built around the idea of the death and the dark storyline that was the dad story. I don't know how that fit with the central idea that I just named. And maybe there was something else that the book was going for, but I don't know. It just felt like there was just that little extra thing that that offset what I really liked about the book.
I just felt like it jumped around too much in time towards the end of the issue. Like, the first half of the issue was fine. I thought it was probably Riley Rosmo's best art in a couple of issues so far. It was much clearer in terms of the action. But then we start jumping forward in time as soon as they had to exit the dream state, which just felt hard to follow what we were getting towards. Did we start with the moon is following us thing? Like, literally, or is this the first time? Because the last page ends with
I think
the
this is where the landing. Yeah, I don't remember it earlier on. But I would also say, like, they have all this sort of messaging about, like, parents and kids. But then you have this other sort of evil parent trying to rescue his kid, and he gets his face ripped off. Yeah. Then there's no good thing that happened.
Many dreams inside of dreams in this book. Yeah. I'll just say that. It started with a really simple concept, and it had, like you said, some interesting ideas throughout, but it had too many ideas going in too many directions and couldn't quite bring them together.
I'm sorry that you didn't like the homage to Face Off in the middle of this, but that's
homage to Face Off.
Thank you. I thought it was great as well.
Mm-hmm. Really good. When his face landed on John Travolta's, I was like,
right. Yeah, the main thing I remember about Face Off is them taking the faces off.
Right.
Not putting them on or switching them.
That's meant to be the takeaway, Alex.
No, I don't remember the switch. I remember them facing off, the faces coming off.
You thought that was it? They would just take their face off?
Yeah, and then I turned it off.
Here's what I remember.
I fast-forwarded through the rest.
What I remember the most is the magnetic boots in prison that happened in that movie. That was cool.
The gold gun.
Great movie. What a great summer. They came out the same summer as Con Air. What a wild summer for Nicolas Cage.
Let me just say, the Face Off, like The Moon is Following Us, had a little too much going on.
Take it easy. Just because you didn't doesn't mean that it's... I thought it was very touching and very moving, and I thought it was a kind of adorable way to end it with that.
Are you talking about Face Off? Because to say Face Off is touching and moving is
situation. The moon is following us.
Separate the two titles anymore.
At the end with the title.
I was most of the time I was reading The Moon is Following Us, I was watching Face Off, so it's hard to...
Well, it syncs up at times, so I can see why you would do that.
Yes, exactly. But you start reading the comic when the first face comes off. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's when you start reading it.
Yeah. It's like the lion roar, you know?
Alder Venom, number 7 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Carlos Gomez. After the big revelation that Mary Jane and Venom are inextricably tied together, Flash Thompson is ostensibly coming for her, but they need to figure out how to not have to kill each other. Things go, of course, terribly wrong, and stuck in the middle are the rest of the characters that we've been following the rest of the series. I know I said this is the last issue, and I'll stop saying it with this issue. I was definitely wondering how the series would work after the main mystery was done, and as of this issue, the answer is very well. This comic is very fun and very ridiculous, and it's nice to see Al Ewing just goof off with some Venoms.
Yeah, it's freewheeling, and I love that about it. And here's two examples of it. You've got Rick Jones wearing a T-shirt with the Defenders on it, aggressively super, wearing this T-shirt.
Yeah, super aggressively.
Very fun. He's like, he's trying to, he thinks he's fooling everyone. He's like a shitty Superman, essentially. He's like, no one's going to find out my secret identity or whatever is happening. And it's very funny what he's doing. Almost parody of old school Silver Age comics. But then you've got all the Venom stuff, which I think is really fun. But I got to say, the Paul commentary has absorbed the internet hate of Paul and is just sort of spitting it back. He's called Top Knot by Venom's son in this. And he's like, hey, you know what? We're going to go. We are going to go. But you're grounded. We're going to go get burgers. And it's just like, what? Why?
But then they go to get burgers and Dylan is like, oh, are you getting a plant-based burger? And he's like, it tastes the same.
It's leaning in so hard to the Paul hate, and I love it. It's working so hard.
Yeah.
Also, love this cover. It kind of reminds me of old Spy vs. Spy a little bit. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. This is a blast. This is over the top, and it's very fun. We got the white Venom versus the black and gold. So this is a good time.
Yeah. Do you remember this issue? And then I want to move out. And after this, really shipping Flash Thompson and Mary Jane. I think it's going to work out.
Oh, that would be fun. You can't just drop a bomb and then move on. That's really cool. Wait, I have one more thing to say. Remember that Spy versus Spy?
That's really fucked up.
You remember that Spy vs. Spy comic where they went to Italy and fucked each other? Anyway, Flash and Mary Jane for sure, 100%.
No!
Absolute Green Lantern number 3 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Jinoy Lindsay. This issue sort of focuses on John Stewart, a character that we don't know too much about in this new continuity, as the back in the flashback portion, they're dealing with a strange green wall and Abbott and Cern seemingly disintegrating people. Meanwhile, in the present, Joe Mullen has Green Lantern powers and Hal Jordan has Blackhand gun powers. Been a lot of back and forth in our Discord on this book in particular, but I think we've been enjoying it here on the show in direct defiance of our Patreon supporters.
This is weird, but I like it. I really like all the kind of different things that are happening. Also, I love the art style. There's like a youngness to it that I really like that makes this kind of feel like anything can happen. I also think it's interesting the way we're just kind of getting little pieces of information and there's this judgment going on and then this kind of reverse green shield thing happening where normally the green shield is, or the green is something we can control. It kind of feels like they're just trying to learn the powers of it. So I don't know. It's weird, but I love it. And it's been interesting enough and different enough. As someone who's not a fan of Green Lantern, I feel like it's doing something to me where I'm enjoying myself. Yeah,
this is the Green Lantern you love. Wow. Shocking revelations from Mr. Pete LePage, the Scotch Tape King of Canada. I wish. I like this book. And you know what it reminds me of? Is sort of the more coked up novels of Stephen King. It's some of the like a lot's happening. It's moving like a little too fast. Like when they're like, hey, look, yellow stuff, gold stuff flows through the green shield. And then the alien's like, hey, I'm going to kill you. Why? Right. Then? And then the alien floats away and he's like, okay. And we all move
on. It's so ominous and weird. And the placement, there's something.
Stephen King is a good call because it's, small town horror mixed with people on the road with good and evil battling for control. So yes, I think you're 100% on the mark about that. Pete, like you were saying, I think the art that Junoi Lindsay has here, and we've been setting it before, is very manga influenced. And I also think, by the way, I did not realize we had Al Ewing back to back, so my bad there, but
we have Ewing Block.
This is a very different Al Ewing than the other book, because I think what he is going for is like a manga chapter pace more than anything. Like,
interesting. Yeah, it's a great
the sort
call.
Of thing that I think might read better to folks in a trade volume, just because we're getting these little bits of first Hal and then Joe and now John. I don't know who we're going to get in the next issue, but I like this. I think this is interesting. It doesn't have the societal focus necessarily at this point of the other Absolute books, but I think what it's doing is pretty interesting.
Agreed. These books are Al Pals.
Yeah. Endless Night, number one from Mad Cave Studios, written by Mark London, art by Tom Derenek. And I'll say up front something I did not know going on in here until I got to the end. This is like the fourth or fifth series in this world. Something that is really helpful to know when you pick it up and you're like, who are these people? What is going on? There are 50 things happening. There's a evil closet in this hotel room. And there's a guy with a skull shield.
Skull shield, dude.
There's somebody
scuba-ing
into the beach, bunch of other characters, lots going on.
This and Skull Shield.
Not to keep making comparisons to other media, but like reading this book, I was like, it was like falling asleep in front of HBO or Cinemax and rolling over on the remote and it changes from HBO to HBO 3 to Cinemax 1. And I was like, what? What? Like the blood squirting out and all of a sudden there's a girl jumping out of the water. I was like, this is a wild, wild ride, but, and it doesn't, you know, I don't quite know what's happening, but it's written with strong confidence that is taking me along for the journey.
Yeah, I agree. The confidence is winning me over, and I don't know why I love Skull Shield so much, but.
You don't know why?
Yeah.
You don't know why? Well, one of these days I'm going to send you an invoice for therapy, because that's what we're doing.
Red Hulk, number five from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Jeff Shaw. In this issue, Ross has finally read Hulk again, and he's fighting back against a Doombot army. Meanwhile, Machine Man and Deathlok are trying to escape through the snow, and the American government comes to shut them down. I do have one big question here, though.
I believe can't just call him Ross, like he's Ross from Friends, bro. You know what I mean?
He was on a break. In this issue, they spend a lot of time talking about how the American government can't extricate them until they get past the Latverian border.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Key moment. That's a key thing. That
key
they kept
moment.
Repeating.
Key thing. They got to get
rule,
to the border.
Diplomatic immunity. Yep. Diplomatic immunity.
Except in, I believe it was One World Under Doom number two, Doom got rid of all the borders. So what's
maybe
going on
here? We're not up to Doom 2 on this.
Maybe,
you know what I mean?
Except I believe they talk about the events of One World Under Doom number three, but I could be wrong.
Uh-oh, Alex, time for a no prize. Time for a no prize.
The no prize is that there are no borders except the Latverian.
There we go.
I think Doom said there's no borders, but the American government, you know, doesn't respect Doom's word quite yet. They're still negotiating.
Or they thought he was talking about the bookstore chain, which already closed, and they were
there are no borders.
There's no borders.
Yeah, but Doom's book, they didn't carry Doom's book when he wrote it back in the day, so they were like...
The Art of the Doom?
Yeah. Wow. Great call. Wow. This book, this is like a very regular Hulk book in a good way. Like if you want to see a Hulk, if it's not your Hulk, it's this Hulk, just wreck some shit and then be not want to transform back and do some stuff with a little bit of like a Machine Man cut in. This is a fun book. Art's
really
good.
Fun. It's fun to see Red Hulk fucking up Doombot. I mean,
he even talks about it. He's like, I know I'm wrecking these Doombots, but that's my job.
Yeah, so it's nice to see him loving his work and having some fun. You know what I mean?
Inspiring.
Well, yeah.
You're never too old.
Oh, that's the inspiring part. Great. Yeah, I agree.
And when also, you love it, when you love your work, you never work a day in your life.
But as a Hulk, when you see a Hulk buster, you got to be like, oh, man, I hope I don't get busted.
But was this in this issue? I know I keep asking questions here. Was this the first ever successful Hulkbuster? Because I feel like usually the Hulkbuster is Ross is like, I created this giant robot that the Hulk could never. Oh, he wrecked it.
Oops. Yeah.
This might be the first time the Hulkbuster worked, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And he gets hit and he becomes a big pile of Ross goop. It's gross. Yeah.
But I mean, Red Hulk gets beaten a lot in this series so far. So he's not the strongest one there is. He's just, he is only Red Hulking for a little bit. But when I break out my my Pete Buster and my Zal Buster, you guys are going to really feel it.
Oh, man. I can't wait to see what a Zal Buster is.
Yeah. Justice League, the Atom Project number
yours,
six.
Yeah, Pete, just real quick, yours is candy. Just a box of candy.
Yeah.
Alice is a box of Oreos with fucked up flavors. Oh,
nice. Yeah, you got me.
Yep.
Set up a box, put a stick, put some Oreos under there. Yeah, I'm done.
Caught. You're in that box? You're stuck in that box?
I'm stuck in the box. Justice League, the Atom Project, number six from DC Comics, written by John Ridley and Ryan Parrott, art by Mike Perkins. This is the final issue of the series about the Atoms going after Captain Atom, except they ran directly into the Legion of Doom, who is secretly Inferno, which everybody knows now. How will they get out of this situation? Probably by shrinking.
Oh,
I don't know. I was so bummed because I really liked the city series at the beginning, and like we talked about with the last issue, I think it just like ran head first into what's going on in Justice League Unlimited to the point that it completely lost the great conspiracy fugitive tone of the first couple of issues. I don't know what happened here because I really like this team, and this ending just did not work for me.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It felt like a nice little corner of the all-in DC universe. And instead, it suddenly had the spotlight on it with the Legion of Doom being there. And I think both things couldn't coexist, and the continuity won the fight.
Well, I definitely liked the Joker moment, speaking of Legion of Doom, where he was talking about how shiny. I thought that was fun. I really love the art style and the kind of art that had kind of like a little bit of an old school vibe to it, I would say. Yeah, I thought that it wrapped up okay, but man, I got some grad time, which I was happy about, you know, because grad's kicking some serious butt right now. So it's nice to see grad in the sun a little bit before things all go bad, I'm sure.
Working on your summer grad bod.
Yeah, you got to. But yeah, I just I hear what you're saying, Alex. But I do think that I didn't hate it as much as you're kind of like I didn't fall out of love.
Yes, there's a difference between falling out of love and hating Pete, and we'll talk about that on our next session because we're almost out of time. Be Not Afraid, number one, from Boob Studios, written by Jude Ellison S. Doyle, art by Lisandro Esterin. This is pretty much a mix between The Omen and what was the Twilight Zone episode with the little kid, The House on Maple Street? Is that what it is?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the one where the little kid controls the whole town and can wish and get whatever he wants. It is very disturbing, very upsetting, but this was also one of my favorite issues of the week. This really surprised me with how crazy dark it went, and it's also building up a really interesting mythology that I'm very curious to see where it goes next.
Yeah, really enjoyed I agree with you. Really enjoyed the art as well. Has a sort of like noir-y, and I don't want to say too much about some of the stuff that happens, but noir-y touching on mythology while still sort of building out its own little world. I liked it.
I looked at the cover and I thought to myself, nope. This is way too fucking creepy.
No, but it says be not afraid.
Well, then you should make the creepiest fucking cover of all time then. I was afraid, and then this was scary as fuck. This whole thing was creepy. That creepy kid was fucked up. Hell of an ending. The, spoilers, but the line that God sent me to help me kill your son. Oh, goddamn. So if you're into this shit, you're going to love it. But if you don't, it's scary as fuck.
Excellent. Ultimate Wolverine, number 6 from Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alex Linz. And as a side note, we had Chris Condon on the show this week.
Did we talk to him about this?
Not really.
Not really.
Damn it. What was I doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
We're like Wolverine.
Yes, we were keeping the conversation focused on notes from The Fallout, which is a new title that's coming up in a couple of weeks.
Looks amazing.
But in here, Logan has been taken by Sabretooth back to the Mutant Resistance. And this issue is all about him fighting back to himself. Pete, you seem to be wearing a Wolverine shirt. So what did you think about this?
I loved it, surprisingly. First off, cool cover. Amazing art. The dream sequence stuff I thought was very powerful and cool. I really thought it was creative. That one kind of panel, I don't know if it was page 16, Alex or Justin, but when it was Colossus holding the little Wolverine. Really cool stuff. But I'm very excited and enjoying it. I'm not sure everything that is happening, but I'm having a great time.
My favorite issue of the series so far. I thought this was excellent. The art was really working. It was great to see Logan sort of finally coming, resurfacing. But I thought this sort of the mirroring of, or the connection between the art and the writing here, where it really felt like we were walking down the hallways of Logan's brain to finally get back. I thought this was excellent.
Totally agree with you guys. I just wanted to give one shout out about the lettering as well, which I think really played to that. Yeah. There's a lot of play of white and black in this issue, and having just small, almost pinprick lines, just like one, two words popping out there, looking like flakes of snow that are also falling throughout the issue. I thought it was really gorgeously done.
Agree completely. Yeah. The one thing I wanted to say is outside of this issue, but it concerns the X-Men universe. There was a issue of the X-Men, a flagship title that came out this week, not in our stack.
Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting. It's just something to think about, that one of the flagship titles, due to what it's doing, has fallen out of the stack.
Yeah. I mean, to talk about it specifically, I definitely waffled about that a lot because I felt like, of course, we want to talk about X-Men. That is, like you said, a flagship. But particularly on the heels of our State of X talk, where we all feel different levels of ambivalent about different titles in this line. X-Men, I've mentioned this before, not to pull back the curtain too much, but I feel like it is not worth us having a title in the stack if every week we say, every month we say the exact same thing over and over again.
Agreed.
And we have hit the same thing over and over again about X-Men. We're like, this is fine. It's fine. And we haven't had much of a discussion about it. So
I agree. It was not a criticism of the choice. It was just very interesting to me.
Yes. Definitely sat there for a while thinking about it, and then I made a call.
Oh, wow. Well, I think you made the right call.
Thanks, man. Batgirl number 8 from DC Comics, written by Tate Bravo, art by Isaac Goodhart. Cassandra Cain has taken a train trip to...
Hey! Can't have a train, toot-toot. We got a choo-choo.
Kicking on a train again. And while she's there, she is listening to her mother's last, or reading her mother's.
I think she's reading it.
She's reading.
It's not a podcast.
No, she's got headphones in as well.
I don't know. There was a point in the middle of Lady Shiva's dying wishes where she plugs MyPillow, I believe, which kind of felt like a podcast. Like, Jesus Christ. So I don't know.
MyPillow. Who's got MyPillow on their podcast?
I mean, if anybody's going to have it, Lady Shiva's going to have it.
Yeah, she's a villain. Technically, Alex, you got to remember this series is about perhaps some Lady Shiva redemption.
No, perhaps. Gorgeous issue. This is Tate Bromble and Isaac Goodhart have worked together on a bunch
of
stuff.
Gorgeous cover.
Something is Killing the Children universe. They've done stuff there. They also worked together on the Oddly Adventures of Christopher Chance.
Oh, that's good.
What is the name of that?
the oddly compelling
adventures? Oh my God, why can't I remember this? It's a very long title. Anyway, they've worked on that together, so they're a good team who knows what they're doing, but it gives it this very storybook quality throughout that I thought was really lovely.
The oddly pedestrian life.
Thank
of Christopher
you.
Chaos.
Yes. Yeah.
Christopher Chaos, that's what it was.
Yeah. Christopher Cross.
Christopher Cross. Sailing
was chaos trying to figure that out. This continues to be a blast. I never thought I would have so much fun watching someone read, but this was just really impressive.
Well, there's a lot more going on than she just reads at the very beginning and the very end.
Yeah, I know. I'm making a joke. But I do think that this is great to spend so much time in kind of Batgirl's not only head, but kind of backstory and finding out all this stuff about these characters. It's really going to help moving forward with this character. So I'm having a blast on this train ride with them, just learning more as the train moves forward in life.
Wow, what a philosophy. All aboard the Kane train. I am liking this. They've been able to sort of hide this flashback, fleshing out of Lady Shiva in the midst of a Batgirl story. There's very little Batgirl action here, but it is very compelling. And to shout out the R, I like the two dudes who enter this story. They look like G.I. Joe characters from an 80s G.I. Joe comic. Yep. And
oh, really?
It really...
I thought Street Fighter.
I think Street Fighter is the other comp. They look like, like a
Double
Ken
Dragon.
And another dude. Yeah. definitely, like, the art fits the style of the story in such a not realistic... Like, I don't think... These people were actually wearing like short pink vests walking around back then, but it really matches. Purple. It really,
the 80s
it really
were
works.
All about pinks and purples. What are you talking about?
A short vest, like a vest that goes down like right to your ribs.
Yeah, I used to wear a lot of
half
vests
shirts
back in the day.
Were a big thing back
vest.
Then.
Yeah. A half shirt vest that could is impossible to button.
That's right.
Pete is a tailor, so he would know.
Yeah. Yep. Pixar didn't happen, Pete. Pixar didn't happen.
Wait, I have a question for you guys about this because I legitimately don't know the answer to this. There's a scene where somebody comes by and is like, excuse me, Miss Kane, it's time for your meal, chicken or pasta. Yeah. Does that happen on trains? I thought...
Yeah, long trains, you get meals.
To you? Really?
And I agree with you, Alex. I think this is like an airline thing that is being maybe ported over to a train. I've never been on a train, especially not
ever?
In America. Oh. Yeah, what is it? So it's like a car, but you can't turn?
You can't turn.
They
Someone else
drive, it, right?
I can't imagine. You get to drive the train? Everyone takes turns?
Of course.
I mean, I would assume with the amount of money that I don't know, maybe she gets meals or whatever, but I did panel, she got both of them.
She got both. Very
which
funny.
Which I thought that was fun.
I agree that that was fun, but I definitely thought that person was trying to kill her or give her a message or something because I was like, this doesn't happen on a train. What's going on?
It was
on
weird
here?
Because there was such a, and also focused on, you get to see a panel where you see the pasta and the chicken dish. And I was like, why are we focusing on this? But famously, trains, cars have the dining car where you go and get the food.
Also, who would give a choice of pasta or chicken? That's weird.
I will say the last flight I was on, when I just went to Rome and back, both ways it was chicken or pasta.
Oh, but that's Rome. They're going to give you a big spaghetti dinner on the way.
What the? I don't think
it wasn't like there's an Italian chef.
It's not racist. Like, that is not
well,
racist.
Well, you went to Rome. Of course they're going to give you pasta.
Yeah, but it's not
chicken.
Racist.
I mean,
it's
here's
rude.
The thing. Any flight in America it has nothing. They're would you like these chips we found?
Yeah.
That's all they
we
have.
We have some leftover snacks.
Yeah, what's on your shoe? You could eat that.
Yeah. They're like, you could pay $12 for some cheese and old bologna. And you're like,
I will say, not to big ups a company, but when I flew American Airlines to L.A. a couple of weeks back, both ways they gave us meals free of charge.
Full meal.
Full meals.
Really?
Both ways. It was crazy. I couldn't believe it.
Wow, that's
I don't
that's
listen
cool.
to you when it comes to travel because you had a great time on that flight down to New Orleans and they didn't give a shit.
Well, they're not going to. That's a short. It's like a 2.5 hour
strapped to the, Pete was strapped to the outside like that monster of that other Twilight Zone.
Yeah. He was a wing gremlin. I would like the wing gremlin seat, please.
That's how I always travel.
How many bags can you pack for that?
Yeah.
It's all.
Yeah, hard to check a bag. But I saw a flight attendant throwing some sun chips to the wing gremlin on my flight. It's really hard. You got to really sync up.
Speaking of which, let this one be a devil number four from Dark.
Oh, we're still doing the stack? Oh, wow.
I don't know why.
Not we're really. Let me just be honest. Not really.
Great cover.
Thank you, everybody who listens to this. Written by James Dunn of the Fourth and Steve Fox and Zach Thompson. Art by Peter Kowalski and Eric Zawadzki. This is the last issue of this title, delving into the legend of the Jersey Devil. And then we get a backup story about an additional legend. This did not turn out the way I thought and ended in a very, like, strange, dreamlike way that I wasn't expecting at all.
This whole comic felt... This whole comic felt a little bit like a dream, and it's fine.
Because you were in this comic, because the guy makes the joke about being a classically trained actor.
You leave your mark.
I did almost screenshot that and send it to you.
Yes, I mean I loved that, but that whole first bit, I was like, what? What is this? Mm-hmm. What is this about?
Being classically trained is you're
always on call.
Yeah.
The thing I love the most about these and sort of the little world that James is creating is the backups. The mm-hmm. true weird backups that were in this and in Blue Book are awesome. I want just more of this. He's creating like it's not quite an anthology series, but like. The front backup idea is really nice, so more of this, even if the front story felt like someone describing a dream to me.
Yeah, I was very excited by what was happening, but then it just turned out the devil was just kind of a mama's boy, you know what I mean? Which is a relief, I guess, you know?
Well, I do think what they were trying to get out here is the idea that the legend of the Jersey Devil and also legends like this endure throughout time for a variety of reasons. They may be true, they may not be true, but the belief in them is something that causes them to be real to varying degrees, where it can actually literally be a creature that is the Jersey Devil. It can be something that becomes a movie. It could be something that is this relationship between these two brothers, a stressor from the outside on them lurking somewhere in the woods. So I think that's what they were getting at. But at the same time, it jumped so many places, particularly in this last issue, that I don't think it quite came together as a story.
Do you think it also could be like one of those douchey actors who's like always talking about how they're classically trained and stuff like that?
Absolutely. That's more of a Syracuse devil, I would say, but yes.
Yeah, I do wander through the woods and recite some like pretty Dees Shakespeare monologues.
Pretty Dees.
The Amazing Spider-Man, number 5 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Pepe Larraz. This is the last issue of the arc as Spider-Man battles the Hobgoblin, who is trying to take control of poison soda. Is that what's going on here, I believe?
Well, Alex, the scheme was...
A lot of magic mushrooms in this.
The scheme was a thoughtful one. The Hobgoblin had put a... 2 years ago, put an antidote, a treatment to this this anxious, anxiety-causing soda on the market and waited for those 2 years. This is, by the way, a villain with giant wings. He then hard to see at the patent office, I would say. But then he also... So then create the soda to sell the cure to them, the pharmaceutical giants being the real villain here.
Oh, wow.
I have a question about this issue for you guys. A couple of weeks back, we had a big argument about whether Mary Jane is allowed to call somebody else Tiger. And it got pretty heated. It spilled over into our Discord. People were going back and forth arguing about it. In this issue, Spider-Man calls Hobgoblin Gobby. Which I feel like that is his name for the Green Goblin. Hobgoblin is Hobby. And I thought that was pretty upsetting. Do you agree?
Wow. Really good. Really good. Because you're shipping. Who are you shipping in this?
Yeah, I guess. I'm not shipping. Team? It's just that's his villain name. That's his name to drive the
Hobby
Green
Hut,
Goblin.
Or what is
Hobby? You'd call it
Hobby Hog? Is that what you said?
Hobby Hut? What's the name of that store?
Hobby Lobby.
Hobby Lobby. That's what I was saying. Yeah. You can call him Hobby Lobby.
Hobby Lobby, that's the one that supports all the anti-LGBTQ plus horror shows. I was going to call them charities, but that's not what they are.
The villain of this.
Yeah, they suck. Yeah.
They do. Also, to call a business a lobby is incorrect, unless it's an actual lobby. So
yeah,
that's
they don't
just
sell
wrong.
Goods. You just go in and wait.
Yeah,
you
unless you're walking through a Hobby Lobby into a larger hobby store that doesn't have
for a hobby because you're like, I don't know what one to pick. They'll give you one.
You now, on the other hand, Gobby Lobby, very upsetting.
That's purgatory, I believe, is the Gobby Lobby. But getting back to this book, I've never been a huge hobgoblin guy. Mm-hmm. I thought this arc really used Hobgoblin well, and the art in this issue in particular was fantastic, particularly on Hobgoblin himself. I really liked the way that the story sort of pushed through the Peter's hallucinations. We settle, and the hallucinations are much their memories, I guess, at this point, are much nicer. Sort of land us in this place that Peter wasn't such a goody-goody, but was, you know, had an adolescent phase where he maybe did some bad stuff, but like made some friends and learned some lessons on his own, which I feel like we haven't really seen. Really appreciate that. And my love for this book will rest on the little words at the end on the final page. Five words with a hyphen. Black cat comes a callin'.
No,
shouts.
You fucking love.
See you next.
That's the real reason why you're. Yeah, I mean, this is. I do agree. The art's amazing. Also, a lot of weird drug shit here, where people are like tripping balls, and then they like smash a magic mushroom in his face at the end. The whole thing. So that was a little crazy. But I was very happy that we didn't mention MJ once in this issue. So I was just like, oh, what a relief.
Do you want her off the board?
No, I just either
she's
bring
Venom
her
now.
Back.
She's or, with Paul.
You know,
yeah,
I can't.
You want to see Spider-Man with Shay.
No, God, stop. No.
It's interesting, as you're like Mary Jane Stan, but you're like, thank God she wasn't in the issue.
Yeah, because they...
Is it because you want to see her with Flash Thompson?
No.
I agree.
I just leave her alone until you bring her back properly is what I would like.
Bring her back. She's around.
She's we talked here. About her like, I don't know.
She's Venom. She had a sort of date with Flash Thompson.
Yeah. That's really, things are really heating up for them. Pete, where do you think they should go on their second date?
They shouldn't. They should cancel it. Because they don't belong together.
I vote for Italy. I think it's funny that we talked a lot about Italy early on, and then I sort of casually mentioned that I went to Italy, and nary a word from you two. We only talked about my plane food.
We didn't want to bring it up. We don't want to get you in trouble with the law.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. I don't know
I'm saying
how things stand with the new pope in you. Birds of Prey, number 22.
Oh, Pete's ready to move on. Birds of Prey, number 22 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sammy Basri. The birds are under attack by a mysterious enemy, and they're trying to figure out who it is and why in this issue. Meanwhile, Barda is missing, and by the end of the issue, another member of the birds crew may be taken out. I really love the amount of danger that the birds are in here. They feel over their heads in a way that they haven't felt this entire series, and that's a hard place to put a team like this in.
And it's been a slow creep up to that, I feel like. The pacing on this series is so nice, and really, like, slowly building the tension while still having some fun to relieve the tension, but it's still creeping up behind the scenes. Fantastic.
Yeah, the crazy last panel, amazing art and action. This continues to be so great and fucking exciting. This really delivers. This book does such a great job of maintaining such an impressive momentum and story. I'm having a blast with this, and I'm a little worried about our team.
Buried Long, Long Ago, number 2 for Mad Cave Studios, written by Anthony Cleveland, art by Alex Cormack. Back in the day, this mom killed a bunch of men to take their money and their possessions. She has three daughters, and they're... very reticently helping her take care of the birders. Meanwhile, there might be a horrible supernatural entity outside their house. And that continues to build in horror this issue. We had Anthony Cleveland on the show a couple of weeks back, so you can check out the interview on this book. But Justin, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, I'm enjoying this. Lots of blood and squeezed up bodies. But this book does a great job of letting us really ride with the kids as they encounter some like innocuous scary things. And then some legitimate horrifying things. And then the central figure, the mom, who goes from plotting to horrifying over the course of this issue. And I feel like every issue, like things were bad in the first issue. Things are worse now. It's hard to tell what's going to happen to our fam.
This is just too scary to deal with. And then. That whole shitter scene in itself was just insane. So
you're talking about an outhouse?
Yeah, the outhouse.
That was like a scene out of the poster. I mean,
outhouse
Ghoulies.
Is already scary. I mean, you can't. You know what I mean? Jesus.
When was the last time you used an outhouse? Like, I'm not talking a porta potty. I'm on a true outhouse.
I don't know if I ever have, bro.
Well, you own your own house, so you can just go wherever, right, Pete?
That's right. Every room's an outhouse.
I got bad news, Pete. A lot of those rooms are in-house. You don't want to poop in-house.
How about you, JT sis?
Hey, I'm a country boy. I grew up on a well water. Like, I know what an outhouse. I know my way around an outhouse.
Yeah, I'm not. You were. The question was, when was the last time? So that's what I'm asking.
Fair.
You.
I used one, I think, last summer.
What?
They're around.
Yeah.
Porta potties really took a lot of the, stole the thunder of the outhouse. Guys are better.
Do you think
most
the outhouse
ways.
Industry gets together and like, what are we going to do?
Outhouse industry. Describe to me one employee of the outhouse industry.
Well, there was Diamond Outhouse Distributors recently went bankrupt. So yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I don't think they're going to recover.
A lot of scandal involved there. Well,
yeah, my LOS, local outhouse shop that I visited Wednesday.
Can you please bag and board this?
Storm outhouse. Number 9 from Marvel, written by Burroway, Yodelay, art by Lucas Wernick. In this issue, a bunch of stuff going down. A Storm has been taken in by the U.S. government and questioned about her involvement in the escape of Professor Xavier. Meanwhile, Maggot is holding a fight club back at her home.
Omega Maggot.
And I'll tell you what, as usual with this book, even though there are insane things going on almost constantly, man, the way that they bring it together by the end is so satisfying.
Yes.
This book is crushing it right now.
Yeah, it
might be the number one X book right now. So, folks, if you're not reading this, you got to get in. And let me say, there's a lot going on. And we get, you know what, a book, I feel like here's something we need to add. When the book crosses the Sidorak line, when it mentions Sidorak and is like, here's the thing with Sidorak, I'm like, you're deep. You're in quite deep. You're like outhouse deep right now if you're talking Sidorak. And this book does it, but it works. I like that it's touching on Manhunt stuff. We got like some super heavy intergalactic stuff happening. We're dealing with just regular Storm stuff. You've got Omega Maggot having a fight club untouched to the rest of the story for the last many issues. It's just its own thing. It's firing on all cylinders and making weird, hyper-detailed choices. Got to read this book.
And my favorite part, which is, you know, Storm needs a lawyer and calls She-Hulk, and then you're wondering if, like, She-Hulk's available or a good choice or maybe too busy, but, man, she comes through like a Mack truck at the end. Ah, it's just glorious.
Poison Ivy, number 34 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Mauricio Takara. Poison Ivy is under attack in the marshlands, and it is up to Janet from HR to try and help her, even though this is Janet's fault. And she musters an army to come and save her, though things are not completely resolved by the end of the issue. Another great issue of this title. And I want to say, based on our conversation about X-Men, this is a book that I feel like every issue, like, this is really good. But it is really good. I don't know.
I was going to say, where's he going with this?
This is another one that I waffle about because I'm like, we don't necessarily add too much to the discussion otherwise, other than this is really solid every month.
But this one where, you know, there is a ship here with the Janet from HR and Croc, and this is essential for their relationship.
Killer Jock.
Here's the thing, though. Isn't the central relationship of this book Janet and Poison Ivy?
Yeah.
No, the central relationship is if Croc and Janet from HR are going to last, you know, because this relationship.
I think the answer is a strong no. I mean, they hooked up for a couple issues. I mean, the end of this issue is bad news for their relationship. Also, Janet's straight up dying. That's been the story, and Croc is dragged out of there. But one thing different I would say about this is that, like, I do enjoy this. This issue in particular, the fleshing out of the larger ensemble characters in this, I was like, look how big this book is. It's taken on a little bit of a fairy tale idea. You know, this issue in particular reminds me of Fables in that it's like, oh, super wide cast. There's a little bit of magicality happening with the way that Janet gets back to Gotham. And everyone is like, it's a chessboard that everyone's sort of moving around. So, like, if you're a fan of Fables and you're for some reason not reading this, I think get it.
Yeah, Jump Scare number 4.
It's also awesome.
It is great. Jump Scare number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Denny Luckert. I think this might be the final issue of this. I'm not 100% sure, but it takes place in a world where there are these creatures called Leviathans that give people weird powers. Most people have turned into horrible monsters, except for our titular character, Jump Scare, who can channel weapons from her favorite scary movies. Things have gotten bigger, the mythology wilder as the series goes on, but it continues to be a lot of fun, and if this is the wrap-up, I thought this was a really good one.
This is a fun bun run that we're on
right now. Yeah, it's a fun bun run is what I was going to say.
You were going to say those same words.
Yeah.
I guess we'll never know. And if this is the last issue, it's set up to tell more.
Before anybody gets upset about this, before we did the show, you guys wrote down what you were going to say, and you put it in an envelope. So now it is time to open those envelopes and read what you said.
I will.
Okay. All right, Pete, do you want to read yours first?
Yes. I would like to go on a fun bun run.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right, Justin, what did you write down?
I said chicken or pasta. I guess Pete wins this round.
Yeah.
All right. This is going to come back, and that's what I should have said. I'm a classically trained actor. I write that down every day. This book is going to come back, I bet. I hope this book is selling, because this book is very good. This book goes so hard and is such a fun, I say this positively, video game-esque main character who is just like locking and loading different, interesting, fun weapons, telling a story that has a much wider scope than we've seen so far, so you know we want to come back for more.
Yeah, it's just great use of power set. I love all the layers of the story there, and then we get the fun sister twist here. So, yeah, this is
great. The sister twister?
Mr. Sister? Yeah, I just think that this is just a blast, and it continues to be impressive. And it's great because the main character has fun, you know what I mean? So it really kind of makes everything enjoyable.
Resurrection Man, Quantum Karma, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Anand RK and Jackson Butch Gweiss. This issue, our Resurrection Man is still grappling with the idea that the love of his life that he lived through his entire life for once has died. Meanwhile, the man who wants to eat him is coming closer and closer.
Eating all sorts of stuff.
Gorgeous, gorgeously drawn book. Very much like we said with the previous issues, playing to Ram V's strengths, which is the idea of what happens to us after we die, etc. So very philosophical at the same time.
And the art really reflects that. Shouts to Butch Geis, RIP. This work is still coming out, despite the fact that he has passed. I was really taken in this by the Vandal Savage and Resurrection Man as Cain and Abel, and how one was given immortal life, the other was given immortal death, essentially. And that's just really smart writing. I liked that. I liked the way it was sort of shown and not told overtly. The art is really nice. It has an old school comics feel to it with the lettering and some of the text pages you get in here. Great series. Up there with the everyone's hyping New Gods for like big mythological storytelling. I think this is on par with that.
Yeah, and I just want to kind of echo what you guys are saying. This is worth it for the art alone. I mean, really beautiful colors here and amazing page layouts and just so artistically forward, these panels and pages. Just such an amazing look to it. It's sad and powerful and just really well done.
Plague House, number 3 from Oni Press, written by Michael W. Conrad, art by Dave Chisholm. After a mostly botched haunted house invasion special, whatever, by a bunch of folks who do that sort of like ghost hunters thing. Ghosts and death have started to spread out all over the United States. We get a big revelation by the end of this issue about what is going on with some weird deaths. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, this was really tripped out and creepy as fuck. And, tons of action and love the art and some cool fight stuff, but I'm not really sure what's going on or how much I'm able to kind of really process.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on here, and all of it's interesting. It has like sort of gothic, noir, horror, fantasy elements all sort of smashed into different scenes. And our main character, it's hard to tell if he's like someone we can really ride with in this. Mm-hmm. 'Cause he's ostensibly doing the right thing, but also seemingly killing people and running from death while also courting death in a lot of ways. So it's definitely, there's a swirl of activity here, and it feels like not only like a dream, but a fever dream. But maybe I have that fever.
Oh! Secret Six, number 4 from DC Comics, written by Nicole Maines, art by Steven Segovia and Sian Torme. In this issue, our team is escaping from Silver Banshee, and we're also going back in the day to find out what went wrong between Catman and Deadshot.
Blood feud,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's it. That's what happened.
That's lucky.
What do you think about Catman with his little claws?
I don't love this costume. Like, they have a flashback showing him in his old costume, the one that he wore during the Gail Simone Secret Six run. Yeah. But I think that's a better costume. This one feels very like Marvel Rivals busy to me, with the high collar and the big bulky cut and everything. And I don't love it.
Hmm. He has it. His claws are like Wolverine's if he just popped him a little.
Yeah. Like a cat.
Yeah. I don't know. And his costume in this looks a little too, like, it looks like a sort of Wolverine, old, like a golden age Wolverine. I don't know. The whole thing, I got a little caught up on that. And I guess I'm just not as big of a Secret Six guy as I feel like, Alex, you're our Secret Six representative here.
I love Secret Six.
Yeah, Pete really likes Secret Six as well. So what are you thinking about this before I go into it?
I thought this was cool. I like the, you know, just kind of like showing us a little bit of past history. It's fun, this kind of blood feud. I thought it was two interesting characters to kind of put up against each other, but great art and action.
I feel like I missed something because they were like, how'd you have this falling out? And we get the flashback and it just seems like, I don't know, they kind of bummed out a little bit.
Well, but they were just, it seems like they were buddies. And then they were like, yeah, that's when I got shot by someone else. And then we lost touch. I was like, what?
So there's a lot going on in this book, and it feels like it needs to focus. That's my main thing going on right now, because there's a lot of people going in a lot of different directions. This still doesn't really feel like a team. I felt like we were finally getting that last issue, and this issue blasts them apart into separate areas. And I want to see how they work together. I mean, like, that's the joy of it. I also want to see, like, a clearer mission in terms of what they're doing, and I'm not getting that either. So I want to like this title, and it's just, it's not quite coming together yet. Radiant Black, number 34 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Eduardo Ferragato and Marcella Costa. In this issue, a new villain comes straight for Radiant Black, and it's pretty devastating. He gets his butt handed to him, and I want to laud this issue for not only ramping up the danger, but also... We like this book. We've talked about every issue of the Massiverse stuff for the most part. One part where Radiant Black in particular has been lacking is any sort of real villains that you can hold on to. Like, we had Shift for a little bit.
Yeah.
But Shift is kind of pops in and then pops out and doesn't really do anything. This really feels like a palpable bad guy for Radiant Black that we haven't really seen in 34 plus issues. So yeah. I liked it.
Yeah, agree. I mean, and I love the Shift as an inspiration for a great eatery in New Orleans as well.
Shouts out to Shift. Amazing food. Yeah, this is hard because it's like I've said so many amazing things about this book. How does this continue? But yeah, I like the excuse me, the fight sequences in here. I thought the art was amazing. And yeah, this continues to be a must-read kind of pickup. So,
Sorry, I don't want to worry Pete too much, but I've watched a lot of television, and I know that you coughed just now, so that means you have tuberculosis and will be dying shortly.
Oh well, it was fun while it lasted, guys.
Thanks. Well, that's a really well-adjusted way.
I thought you had a really negative feeling.
Just remember, cue up those last words. You want to have a good set.
Okay, good to know.
What are you thinking? You want to workshop it real quick?
I don't know. Maybe something like I love garbage plates and Philly cheesesteaks equally.
Wow. It's like a last meal, but you don't get to eat it?
Yeah.
You just want to say it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, I'll be eating memory. It. Don't you worry about it. That's probably what's going to kill me.
But. You mean in hell? Oh, it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
If you knew the only thing they served in hell was garbage plates and Philly's cheesesteaks, would you try to get there faster?
Maybe, if it was seriously guaranteed. Faster.
All you could eat.
I mean, I'm getting there. I don't know if I need to go faster.
Sure. I mean, it's that's nice. I mean, it sounds like food from hell.
How garbage dare plate. You?
I'm not saying it's not good. I'm just saying it sounds that way.
Well, that's just insulting on many levels. Alex, that we're was at the end of the that, fun bun run.
That was the old. That was an old hobo song. Is they always serve garbage plates in hell?
Yes, we got one last wrap on the wrap. One last lap.
Lap.
On the
Alex, famous runner, famously out there, just getting his personal best.
One last rap, dropping bars on the running field, I assume. Arcana Royale, number two from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Budd, art by A.C. Zamudio. This takes place in a world where there's a high-stakes poker game where the cost is human lives and souls, and it's done by monsters. A regular human player is entering this match and getting further embroiled in the politics of this world. What do you think about this? Did this bring the baton home?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm here for the bun section. And, I thought this was cool, the tarot cards and the poker playing and all that kind of stuff. This is just a fun idea, well executed. Also like the Plan B cartoon at the end.
I also enjoyed this. I like that it. We start with in the character, getting into the character, and then find some really fun fantastical stuff. That seems to be there's a demonic sock monkey hanging out at the poker table. Shouts to that. I'm curious how this evil poker works, this sort of tarot poker, and want to play.
I think all sock monkeys are demonic, if I recall. You can just say sock monkey. You don't need to say demonic, I think.
Yeah, it's repetitive.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
Sure,
Facebook
do.
And YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Man, this life I've had has really been super tight bananas. Died. Dead.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.